You're listening to Trucking Questions from the Audio Road with Kevin Rutherford. This is the show that puts the money where it belongs, back in your pocket. You can ask questions about trucks, money, fuel mileage, maintenance, tires, tax, technology, or anything else about the business of trucking. Here we go. Let's head on down the Audio Road.
Welcome to the program. I'm your host, Kevin Rutherford. The website is letstruck.com. The show is all about the business of trucking. If you've got questions about trucks, money, fuel mileage, maintenance, tires, taxes, technology, health and fitness on the road, getting started as an owner-operator, finding freight, working with brokers, you name it, we'll talk about it here on the air. All you have to do is pick up the phone and give me a call. We're going to get to those calls in just a little bit. I do want to let you know that we have a recording schedule. One of the things I hear from people all the time is that it's so hard to get through on the show. They've got a question, they want to talk to me, and they can't get through on the show. It can be difficult. During the recorded shows, it is easier. In fact, if you get in early and you press 1 to let us know you've got a question, I guarantee we will get to your call. Much easier on the recordings than the live shows. So grab something to write with. I'm going to tell you how you can join us for our recorded shows. They're every Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday afternoon, 1 p.m. Eastern Time. So Wednesday, Thursday, Friday afternoons, 1 p.m. Eastern Time. Real simple to join us. All you do is dial a phone number. You don't need a code, nothing. You just dial the number. You'll be in on the recording, and you can sit and listen. Press 1 if you've got a question, and we'll get to you. The number you call is 347-884-8327. Now, there's a couple ways you can remember this. One, just put a reminder in your phone for those days, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday afternoons, 1 p.m. Eastern Time. Put the phone number in there, 347-884-8327, or you can get on our text message list, and we will send you a text message every time we do a recording and a podcast, and we'll put the phone number right in the text message for you. Now, I'm going to tell you how to sign up for that. You only have to do it once, and then from then on, you'll get the text message and the phone number when we're recording or doing a podcast. So here's all you do. Open up your text message program on your phone. Type in listen. That's it. Just one word, listen. Don't worry about capitalization. And send it to 99,000. That's what's called a short code. It's just like sending to a phone number. So you're going to text the word listen to 99,000. 99,000. Within 30 seconds or so, you'll get a message back. That way you know you're in the system. It's real easy to get out, get back in, whatever you want. Once you're in, you're done. We'll send you every time we're going to record our podcast, we'll put the phone number right in there for you. We are going to jump into some phone calls. Let's get started in Tennessee today. Anna, welcome to the program.
Hi, Kevin. Back in January, you and Lisa gave me your new business program, Take Your Hands Off the Wheel. And okay. So I'm just calling about that.
Okay, good. How's it going?
Well, in a way, it's going well. Yeah, how can I put this? By doing some of the worksheets, I realized I'm not ready to become an owner-operator.
It's not good that you're not ready. That just is. That's
right.
Not good or bad. It's good that you figured it out.
Exactly. You know, I was very anxious. I wanted to get in. It just seems like a good time to be an owner-operator right now.
Let me help you out with that. Because I've been doing this for about 30 years. So I've seen all the, you know, ups and downs in the business world, in the economy, in the industry. I've seen times when freights have been great, when freight has been great, freight has been horrible. And I know there's always this urgency, like, oh my God, I got to get in when it's good. You really don't have to. In fact, if I have to pick, I would rather start a business when times are bad. And I've done it several times. This business right here, in 2007, I sold a successful company and started the radio show and the website, and I had no experience with either one. I had never worked in radio. I had done some, you know, guest spots, but I had never worked in radio, never gotten paid for it. I knew nothing about websites, web design, software, any of that stuff. And what was going on in 2007 and 2008? It was one of the worst economies we've seen in my lifetime.
Oh, God,
but by starting in that really difficult time, I was forced to really run things tight. You know, there wasn't a lot of money going around. Nobody wanted to spend any money. It was a very difficult time. But because we started then, business is never easy, but it almost feels like it's easier now. You know, there's money. People are spending again. The economy looks a little better. It's not fantastic. So trucking right now, it's good. No question. Great time to be an owner-operator. I don't see that going away anytime soon, though. So I wouldn't worry about it too much.
Well, that was, you know, that's what I came to realize is when I did the worksheets for your finances, your net worth, and all that, and I looked at it going, okay, I'm in the right direction, but I still have all this debt. I'm still negative net worth. Now would not be a good time to, because starting your own business can be a risk.
Yes.
And I didn't want to take that risk when I had all this debt hanging over my head. So I was like, okay, I'll pay off the debt over the next 2 years, then I'll be ready.
That's outstanding. And let's think about this. Even if you, let's say something changes and you decide you don't want to be an owner-operator, I think you're going to be and you'll follow through on this, but even if you didn't, wasn't this a great exercise for your life anyway?
Oh, very much. I mean, in your head, you know, yeah, I've got some debt. Yeah, these are my expenses. Yeah, this is how much I make, blah, blah, blah. But when you put it down and see it in, you know, on paper, it kind of opens your eyes to, okay, this is what I got to do. This is what's going on.
You know, and you just touched on something. I think the biggest reason people don't do things like this, you know, it's not complicated. I mean, the worksheets were fairly simple. This isn't rocket science. It's third grade math. We all know how to do this. We all know we should do it. I think the reason people don't do it is because of what you just said. They are afraid that once they see the numbers in black and white in front of them, that then they'll have to change. And I think they're afraid. I think they're afraid to see the numbers and they're afraid to change. So congratulations on doing, that's what we call around here, the hard work.
Well, I mean, for me, I was very glad to see that because it made me realize I'm not ready. I need to get my finances in order. I need to come up with a personal budget and you know, handling money before I go off and, you know, try and run a business.
Yep, absolutely. So let me recommend, since you're working through my program, let me recommend another book that will help you really see clearly to getting the financial stuff in order. It's Dave Ramsey's book called Total Money Makeover.
I have it. I've got
Excellent.
That from Audible, so I've been
Excellent.
Listening to that too.
Perfect. That'll walk you right through the program. That'll get you in really good financial shape.
It's hard, but I'm still determined to be an owner-operator, but it's not going to be on the timetable I originally planned.
Well, let me tell you what the difference that's going to make, though. I deal with people, thousands of people, actually over, you know, the last 20 years, tens of thousands of people who said exactly what you just said. I want to be an owner-operator. The vast majority don't do the hard work. They jump into it not prepared, and the majority of them end up failing at it, and some of them failing at it more than once, or even the ones who succeed tend to struggle. And after a year or two, you know, they're an owner-operator, but they're one breakdown or one tire away from losing the truck. They're always stressed. If you take the time to keep doing what you're doing, your odds of success will be almost guaranteed, really. And, you know, it's hard to make any guarantees in life and certainly in business, but I can tell you, if you work through that program and you work through the total money makeover, your chances of succeeding will go way up over 90%.
I hope so.
They will. Trust me. I've done this a lot. Stick around. Again, congratulations on doing the hard work. Most people don't have the guts to do it, and you're doing it. Congratulations. We'll be right back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. Welcome back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. The number to join us, 8888 Road Dog. The website is letstruck.com. I'm going to go right back to the phones. Let's head off to Indiana. Steve, welcome to the program.
Good afternoon, Kevin.
What's on your mind today?
Yes, I got a couple of reviews of items I had put on at the CMC, and a couple of questions for you.
Okay, shoot.
The first one was, I got a Detroit 12-7, as you know. I have the $10,000 Volvo, and but I have the Detroit 12-7, and I would probably, well, I won't be doing it again, but the diesel tech, it didn't really clean. I mean, my stick was black again when I drove 180 miles, which, you know, they tend to have nooks and crannies in there that probably the diesel tech couldn't get all the stuff out of, I presume.
You know, that's a new product for us. The thing that, and I'm glad to get the review because I've been wondering about this too. I've had Detroits forever, and brand new Detroits, I swear, you put clean oil in them, you check the stick, it looks clean, you drive it around the block, and it looks black as coal. They've just always been that way, and I just don't think it has anything to do whether or not there's buildup or carbon or anything else in the engine. I just think they do that. I don't know why. I've asked, you know, engineers and technicians why, and nobody has a real clear answer. On the other hand, you take a pre-emission cat, put clean oil in it, run it around for a week, you pull the dipstick out, it still looks clean.
Yes, that's true. I actually was clean when I got back from T&E, so 2 miles. It stayed clean for 2 miles, but when I drove over to Kansas to pick my load up that Friday evening, it has gotten, you know, like it normally does, and I don't have a problem with that. It was one of the things I said, you know what, we're doing the OPS right now, we can drop that oil, because I had the top end open to get the injector cups. So I said, I was going to drop the oil anyhow. And turned out, with the oil sample, my silicon was down at 8. I could have kept the oil in there, but that's okay. I didn't know that until we got the oil sample back. So, you know, I'm okay with that. Like I say, I'm into trying things, but I would probably urge people maybe to think twice if they got a 12-7 about doing that, you know.
Well, you know, here's the other thing about the oil, and this is another thing I don't know how to explain. You know, you take those two examples, the pre-emission cat, the oil looks cleaner on the stick, the Detroit, it looks so black, and yet we send them in for oil analysis, and there's no difference. that Detroit doesn't have any more soot in it. You would think it would be soot causing it to be black. I don't know what causes that oil to be so black, but when we send them in for oil samples, they come back virtually identical, which seems odd, but, I mean, that's what I go by. I go by the sample. It tells us what we need to know.
I agree on that. I had the fast put on, and I'm getting more fuel returned to one tank than the other. It's not a big deal with me because I got twin 150s, and I'm trying to fuel a little more often to, Brad had the idea, and the idea that maybe keeping the fuel a little, up higher keeps it a little cooler, I think it probably makes a difference, but, I'm okay with that. I don't have a... It's not like I got small tanks and I'm going to suck it all out of one and be sucking air, or anything. I think the fast is going to be, a great product for me. I just think that, I think something with that Y or that T that makes it go to each one, I think it just... I don't think it's a big deal. Like I say, I'm going to talk to him about it, but I don't think it's a big deal whatsoever. Performance-wise, it's fantastic, so... I'm okay with it. I can deal with it with those twin 150s I've got on here. And I know a lot of people have had that same problem. More goes back to one tank than the other. About 42 gallons is what I filled up the left tank yesterday and 85 in the right tank. So vice versa. The left tank was 85 and the right tank was 42 gallons. So, not a huge problem because I keep enough fuel anyhow.
Got it. You touched on something there that we haven't talked about a lot, but we have a couple of people who listen to the show, are active on the website, very active on fuel gauges, and they always stand out to me because these are guys that and a couple women that really work on their fuel economy. I mean, they tweak every little detail and they track and they learn and they monitor. And one of them who is over 10 miles to the gallon, and that is a legitimate 10 miles to the gallon on older pre-emission truck. Yeah. He talks about the fact that he has documented by keeping his tanks full more often, he gets better fuel economy. And the only thing I could think you could attribute that to would be the fuel temperature.
Yeah, I agree. Tim wrote about that extensively on 10+ group, and he's good. He's a good resource for that. Him and Steven and Jackie and people like that have really been doing it right. They're good resources on that. I got a couple of questions, though. I've got now that... I've got 80,000 miles on this truck since I've got it going. I got it making me good money, great money. I'm doing great with it, and I'm kind of upgrading as I go. I'm going to keep upgrading until I finish up with everything. I'm with the Flow Below. I'll get that. I might get it before next year show, but I'll get that. Now, I got a couple more things to do. You and I talked about it with the fuel mileage makeover. But I've got one thing I haven't done yet, and I've got 80,000 on it, and 1,000,003 is, 80 since I've took it over. 1,000,325 on the truck. I probably need to go ahead and drop the fluids from my transmission and my two differentials and go ahead and replace it because I really don't know when the gentleman did it before me. So that's probably a good idea to go ahead and do it so I can get a time stamp or a mileage stamp on that, right?
It is a good idea. Yeah, if we don't know when it was done, it's one of those things that a couple things happen. People either overlook it, just forget to do it, or they start looking ahead and saying, well, I'm going to sell this thing next year anyway, so why bother? So,
right.
I think it's a great idea. If you don't know when it was done, I would do that.
All right, and one other question. I've got it's been pretty consistent since I've had it. About a gallon every 5,000 for oil. We kind of talked about it's a year or two out from an end frame, most likely. Now that I've got the OPS on here, I've thought about testing a concept. One of the gallons that I add in between my 25,000-mile oil samples now, I'm thinking about putting a gallon of Lucas in, just one of those 5 gallons. Is that a good idea at one every 5,000 and see what it does to my oil consumption, and I don't want to put so much in there that I thicken it up too much, but yeah, I reckon the oil sample will show me that I've got a little higher viscosity, right?
Yeah, and it is a good idea. You're down at that point. We're down to the engine's last year or so of life. We're at, you know, a gallon every 5,000. So to dump in a gallon of Lucas once in a while is a good idea.
Okay, well, I'm going to do that once every 5,000, of every 25,000. You know, one of the gallons I had. And it might slow it down a little bit, too, I know. But I'll keep good records on that and report back to you on that also, because see how what it does, you know, to my consumption, because I do keep really tight records. And, you know, knowing the numbers is like, you know, it's like we talked about at the CMC. You know the numbers, you can figure out what works and what doesn't, you know. So,
there you go. Excellent. Well, I will look forward to getting your reports back.
Okay, and we had
fantastic.
A great time at the CMC, and I just look forward to talking to you again.
All right. Thanks for the call. I'll look forward to hearing your reports back. Those are the kind of reports I like to get. People who are tracking things by the numbers, really paying attention, have things in writing. Those are the people we all learn from. Speaking of the CMC, every year we always say, what a great year that was. How are we going to top it? And, you know, it's sometimes, not very often, but sometimes keeps me awake at night thinking, oh boy, what are we going to do now? But you know what I'm finding is that we've surrounded ourselves with such good people, such a great team, the speakers, the people on our team that help, and most importantly, the people who attend. And they keep making the event better and better every year. Now, next year, it's very clear how we're going to make this one better. You know, there's been a couple years I've wondered, you know, what are we going to change? How do we make it better? We make little tweaks here and there. Next year is a major overhaul in a very good way. We tested it out this year. We're doing something we call changing lanes, where you get to pick the topics you want to learn about all week long, and we have them broken down into three major groups. So we have a lane for people who don't own a truck yet, and they want to learn how to get into the business properly. Now, I'm going to be teaching a lot of that myself. That's an area I really love to help people with. The bulk of the CMC, the middle lane, the center lane, we'll call it, is going to be owner-operators leased to a carrier, and it's all the things you need to know to run that business profitably. And then the third lane is for carriers or people who want to become carriers by getting their own authority. So those will be the major breakdowns. And then we'll have lots of breakout sessions as well. It's going to be a very, very exciting year. We'll be announcing registration open here shortly. We're hammering out the final negotiations. Stick around. We'll be right back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. Welcome back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. The website is letstruck.com. If you have any questions about the CMC, you can always give us a call, 855-800-FUEL. That number works for anything. I'll give it to you again, so grab something to write with. Whether you've got questions about taxes, if you filed an extension, call us. We've got our full-service tax up and running and doing great. We can help you with that. If you need help with setting up your bookkeeping, we can do that on profit gauges. Tracking your fuel mileage, we can help you with that on fuel gauges. We can always answer questions and let you know where we are on registration with the CMC. So that number again, 855-800-FUEL. I'm going to head off to Utah. Matt, welcome to the program.
Hi, Kevin. Hey, I just want to tell you how much of a pleasure it was meeting you at CMC. What a great program. Absolutely.
We are so excited about the growth. You know, I keep thinking back to when we first started it, how many people told me it would never work, and, you know, what a struggle it was the first couple of years, and then Lisa came along and really kind of cranked up thing on it. And now, like I was saying earlier, it is the bulk of the reason why it's such a great program is the people that keep coming and keep coming back and keep adding to it, and the networking and the camaraderie and it really is. I all week long, I just look at it and I'm just amazed at, you know, all the people interacting and all the positive things that happen all week.
Well, it's worth it just for the contacts that you make and the people you talk to and people that you can touch base with and so forth. It's just a fantastic place to network. I just hope that your listeners realize what kind of service you bring, okay? I came out of the corporate world, and I know what it costs to have a business consultant on retainer, and not only do we get a business consultant in you and whatever we want to talk to them, but, you know, you're also a life coach, and so it's just a great thing that you do.
Well, thank you. What can I help you with today?
Well, you were saying that you were kind of struggling with what to call the tribe. You know, you've got guys that like to soup up engines, they call them gearheads, and you've got followers of the Grateful Dead, they call them deadheads. You know, we ought to call ourselves Kevheads. What do you think?
Kevheads. That's a new one. You know, the very first or second year we were on the air, somebody coined the term Fokkers, F-O-K-R, Friends of Kevin Rutherford. So that's kind of been the unofficial, everybody gets a kick out of that when you can call yourself a Fokker. But Kevhead, that's interesting.
Well, you got to be careful with
somebody,
a Fokker, that's for sure.
That's right.
Well, listen, Kevin, I'm looking for a pre-emission Freightliner with a Detroit 12-7, and I think you were talking about, are they still having trouble, like at Pittsburgh, at any place, getting the proper replacement parts? Is that something that's been overcome yet?
You know, it's not completely overcome, but what we're finding is, as long as you do some planning and leave yourself time. You know, it used to be that you didn't schedule this stuff. You run into a shop and say, hey, I need an in-frame. Within a day or two, they'd get you in. By the time they got your engine tore down, they either had all the parts in stock or they'd get them in. I wouldn't recommend trying that anymore. I would recommend talking with the shop you're going to use well in advance, making sure the parts are ordered, making sure they understand the different serial numbers on the engine and that they're getting the right serial number for the right block. And if you do that, then you're going to be fine. So it's really just a matter of pre-planning and talking through all of this. The parts are available. They're just not easily available on a short term.
Well, I know Pittsburgh Power is well aware of the situation, so that's who I'm planning to have do the work. And I think once before you said, I want to buy an older truck and get in as cheaply as I can, you know, even if I got to buy something with over 1,000,000 miles on it. Would you recommend driving it until something breaks or taking it in initially and just planning on doing the in-frame from Jump Street?
You know, depending on what we get, like if you heard the last caller, he bought a $10,000 truck, and he got one of the good ones. It had a couple years of life left in it. You know, he's using a gallon of oil every 5,000, not a big deal. We've been working on his fuel mileage. He went through the fuel mileage makeover at CMC. We're getting his numbers up already, and he's able to bank the money, and then when he goes to do the in-frame, he'll be able to do it exactly the way he wants to. Sometimes it comes down to budget. You know, there are times when people are going to start with the bare minimum, take a little more risk, hope they get 6 months out of the engine. And you know what? I'm more of a risk taker. I don't mind doing that sometimes. Like I said, I started this business in 07, and honestly, most people would have looked at me and put my odds at probably less than 20%. I had no experience. It was a lousy economy. Wasn't even any real clear market for what we do. Nobody else does it, so I couldn't copy what anybody else was doing. So I tend to be more of a risk taker. So I would be the guy who would spend my last $10,000 on an $11,000 truck and, you know, hope that I held it together long enough to fix things as they broke. So that's sure, one way of going sure. about it. The other way to go in is say, hey, you know what, I've got a pretty good budget. I'm not hurting for cash. I would rather do all of this stuff up front, know that my maintenance cost will be low, know that my fuel mileage will be as good as possible, and my profit will be higher from day one. So I don't think either way is right or wrong or good or bad. I just think they're different, and we do sometimes what works best for us.
What about now? I know with racing engines, I know that Pittsburgh Power balance, you can get them to balance the engine. Are trucks ever blueprinted?
You know, somewhat. That term is loosely used, but the way we build the signature engine, it's very, very close to being balanced and blueprinted. I mean, we machine the parts, we refit everything. You know, that one of the examples that you can see, we made a video when we did that first signature engine, and they took the block and they line bore the block and then straightened the crank. And when you put that crank back in that engine, you can turn it by hand. And that's almost unheard of. You try to turn the crank in most engines, it's just not going to happen. And this one is so well fitted, and the block is actually, it's better to build an engine from a used block when we're talking about a six-cylinder diesel, because that is a long six-cylinder, and they warp. When you take a new block and you run it, it warps. Well, once it warps, it's never going to warp again. And then when we line bore it, we make a straight line through that warped block. Whereas a new engine will warp and puts more pressure on the crank, and that creates some resistance. When you line bore it, then we're making a nice straight line through a warped block, and that's why the crank turns so well in there. So those are the kind of things that, if you're willing to spend a little extra money, Pittsburgh Power can do.
Oh, yeah, that'd be fantastic. That's my plan. Okay, well, I just want to thank you for all you do, Kevin. I mean, you know, I'm convinced if someone just plugs into your system and does the hard work, I don't see how there's any way that they're going to fail at this business.
Well, you know, I will completely agree with you on that. We really have brought it down to a system. You know, in some ways, it's similar to a franchise, except there's nobody telling you what to do. Well, I'll recommend what to do. I'll show you what you can do to be successful. In a franchise, they force you to do what you have to do to be successful. That's why franchises have very good success rates, but franchises don't work well for some people. I could never survive in a franchise. I don't like being told every step of how to do things. I'd like to learn how to do things. I like to tweak things and make them a little better. And in a franchise, you can't do that. You're just told, here's what you're going to do. If you do it, you'll succeed. And they're right, you will. I've kind of got a hybrid. I'll make some recommendations. I'll show you what will increase your odds of succeeding, but you get to pick and choose. If you do most of them, I'll agree with you. It's almost guaranteed you're going to succeed. Thanks for the compliments. I appreciate it. Stick around. We'll be right back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. Thank you. right, just a quick reminder, we're going into segment 4. At the end of this segment, I'll say I'm done, good night, all that stuff. Don't hang up because we'll come back and do another hour. Here we go. Welcome back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. We're down to that final segment, so I'm going to get right back to the phone calls. We'll see how many we can knock out before we've got to get out of here. Let's go to Illinois. Scott, welcome to the program.
Hey, Kevin. How you doing?
Well, What's on your mind today?
Well, they put the ELD device, that electronic logging device, they installed it in my truck, and it's playing hell with my computer. My speedometer is fluctuating quite a bit, so is my tech. I know how many RPM I'm supposed to be at 60 miles an hour, and it either drops below that or above it, or all of a sudden I can be going at that RPM and I look down and the speedometer says 67. I bump the ignition key, turn off the engine, start, you know, turn it back on, and everything goes back and resets. And they're trying to tell me that it's, you know, that it's not anything that has to do with this. And my fuel mileage has dropped off. I'm burning more fuel.
Well, let's set the fuel thing aside for a second, because the odds that it's affecting the fuel economy are pretty slim. I'm not going to say it couldn't happen, but I'm going to say it's pretty rare. Do you have a scan gauge?
No, I don't.
Okay. If you had a scan gauge, we might be able to do a little troubleshooting. It's not unusual to plug something else into the ECM or into the data port and have it cause some weird issues. So I'm with you. I think whatever they did probably is what's causing some of your weird readings, but I wouldn't go as far to say as it's affecting the fuel economy yet. That would be pretty rare, because most of these devices are passive. What I mean by that is all they're doing is reading information out of the ECM. The ELDs are just reading, you know, the data that says when the key's turned on, when it's turned off, when the truck's moving, that kind of stuff. It's not sending anything to the ECM. It's the same as our scan gauge. Our scan gauge is a passive device. It's only reading information. It's not sending. It's not changing anything in the ECM. There are products on the market that do send signals and change what's happening in the ECM. Neither one of these devices do that. So it would be a pretty odd situation. Matt just reminded me of something. No, that makes total sense. Your fuel mileage reading is going to be horribly inaccurate right now because you're working off of your odometer that's wrong.
Okay.
That's a perfect explanation for what's going on with the fuel economy. That's another question. The first issue is, who's going to pay for it? I know from your point of view, you would like to say they should pay for it. They screwed this up. But we don't know for sure that they have. We can say it's pretty likely. It wasn't happening before. They plugged into the ECM. Now we're getting these weird readings. It's pretty likely, but it's not a slam dunk. What I would recommend is that, and this is just what I would do, I would take it to a shop, I would get it fixed, but I would tell the shop up front, while you're fixing this, pay attention to what caused it. If you can clearly show that when they wired in the ELD, it did this and caused this problem, please document that and put it in writing so that I can take it back to my carrier and I can get them to reimburse me for this. If it turns out that they can't clearly say what caused it, then you're probably on your own, but we need to get it fixed. So that's the way I would handle it.
Would I take this to recommend a Cummins shop?
Yeah, I would try there first. And most of the time, they will do this kind of work because it's more than likely ECM related. You know, I can remember going to my Detroit shop a couple times, and they'd get an hour or two into the job and say, oh, nope, this is the throttle position sensor. We don't work on those. So I'd have to, you know, run it to my mechanic and let him do it. But if any time it seems ECM related, I would start with the engine shop.
Because this didn't start. Now, I'll grant you the list. Three loads I've had going west were all 10-foot tall on my drop deck, so, you know, I was catching some wind. And on the way back this time, I only had 7,000 pounds on, but they put a 4x8 container on the very back of the trailer, and it dropped it down. I should have been getting over 7, and I was just about 6'5".
Well, and that could be, certainly, you know, on the open deck, every load changes your fuel economy. But, you know, Matt's right on this. We don't know that your mileage numbers are correct, which will throw your fuel mileage numbers way off. If you've got a GPS, you might want to start tracking your GPS miles right now to get your fuel mileage right.
Well, I don't have one, and would you be able to recommend me if I'm going to go out and spend the money, because I've been thinking about it anyway, can you recommend me a quality, reasonably priced GPS device to put in here?
Yeah, you know, the GPS device I really like right now is the Rand McNally tablet, but I don't think that's what I would recommend for you right now. I think just getting into the whole GPS thing, since you don't already have one, I would stay fairly simple. And, you know, your choice comes down to whether or not you absolutely have to have a truck-specific model. Now, I've used a non-truck-specific in the truck, and you just have to be a little more careful. You can't blindly follow the GPS, and you shouldn't anyway. So if you were willing to go with a non-truck specific just to kind of get your feet wet and see what the whole GPS thing is all about and kind of learn how to use one, I would highly recommend any of the Garmin models. You know, and there's so many, I don't want to make a specific recommendation right now. You can get a really good Garmin in the $200 range. And again, it won't be truck specific, so you'll have to be a little more careful, but it's not a big deal because you run around without one right now and you're not running into bridges and that kind of stuff. So just remember that when you're using it, don't blindly follow it.
I pretty much call my shipper and receiver if it's an area I'm not familiar with, because I figure they drive to work every day and they have trucks coming in. They should know,
exactly.
You know what's around.
Exactly. And that, you know, we all did that for years. So it's just that some people, it's like they forget all of that the minute they plug in a GPS and they think they have to blindly follow everything it says. Now, I would still do the same thing on my trips. I would look at a map. I would visualize where I'm going, know the major highways I'm going to take, know what cities I'm going to be going through. And then I would call the receiver at the end and get that last mile described. You know, what street should I come in on? Where's your dock? Which way does it face? Those kind of things. And if you do that, then the GPS is just kind of nice. It guides you. It gives you some time estimates. I like to use a mix of both. And I still do that when I travel. Now, many times I'll pull up, you know, Google Maps and zoom in on the area that I'm going to and that kind of thing. But so I would say, just to get your feet wet, I would go get a reasonably good Garmin, like I say, the $200 range, and just play around with that. And then if you find you really like the GPS and you want something with a lot more features and truck-specific and a big screen, then go to the Rand McNally tablet.
Okay. I will keep that in mind, but I guess when I get back, I'm going in for service anyway, so I'll take it to Cummins.
Yeah, that's what I would do. Let them take a look at it. You know, it may be something simple. It could just be sometimes these kind of things are nothing but a bad ground. You know, so this is one of those times where if you have some time, this is that whole service we talk about where you start at the batteries, pull off all the cables, clean up all the connections, get some dielectric grease back on everything when you get it tight, replace any funky ends or fittings you might have, get everything solid at the battery, and then start working out. And then find all your grounds, take off all your grounds, clean those, grind them back down to bare metal, get them on tight, protect those with some dielectric grease, and just work through the electrical system. Many times just doing that alone solves some of those weird problems. And even if it doesn't, it's a really good thing to do to your truck once in a while anyway. It's also a good time to be looking around at other things while you're in there. All right, the music's playing. That means I've got to get out of here. Thanks for joining me. We'll see you back here next time. Be safe. Be profitable, do the hard work, and master the journey. Good night, everyone. I'm Kevin Rutherford.
Your taxes, your truck, and your road to success in the trucking industry.
This is Trucking Business
and Beyond,
the show that puts the money where it belongs,
back in your pocket.
Welcome to the program. I'm your host, Kevin Rutherford. The website, the show, is all about the business of trucking. We take your calls and we answer your questions about trucks, money, fuel mileage, maintenance, tires, taxes, technology, health and fitness on the road, getting started as an owner-operator, finding freight, working with brokers, you name it. We'll talk about it here on the air. All you have to do is pick up the phone and give me a call. We're going to get to those calls in just a little bit. You know, I was looking through some of my old show notes. I do that once in a while. I most days I'll sit down and I'll jot down a couple ideas, things I might want to talk about at the open, maybe a theme for the show, a lesson I want to get across that day. And I keep those. I sometimes I write them out by hand, but many times I'll type them up and I keep them all around. And I go through them once in a while. And I was looking at the things we've done over the years and the things that have really helped people a lot. You know, I love answering questions. That's what we do here. But I most of the time I feel like that's just not enough. You know, if somebody has a question, it's very satisfying to give them an answer, or even if I don't have the whole answer, give them a direction to go off in. And I do love doing that. And I've always been kind of an advice talk junkie, going back to, you know, Bruce Williams and Clark Howard and Dave Ramsey, and I love that format. Such a blessing that I get to do that. But again, for me, it doesn't feel like enough. I want to be able to do things that have a bigger impact on people. So, you know, when I look back, probably the biggest single impact we've had is getting people to really track their fuel mileage. And we created fuel gauges. Boy, I'd have to go back and look now. It's been 5 years, 6 years maybe. We've had fuel gauges out for quite a while now. Great success. I love the program. But more importantly, I love what it has helped people do. It got people to really, really focus on fuel economy. And it's an area of your business that you have so much control over. That's why we talk about it here. That's why we built the system. But I have watched thousands of people dramatically improve their fuel economy over the years because they started by tracking it. So tracking fuel economy was a big one, no question. I think the next area that we really had a big impact was getting people to go the next step and not just track their fuel economy, but track all of their business numbers. So we created profit gauges. And it's just been so satisfying to watch people start to run their business by the numbers. Now, profit gauges and tracking all of your business numbers has a bigger impact than just fuel economy. But I list fuel gauges and fuel economy first because many times it's what gets people started. It's that first critical step that gets them heading down that path of improving things. Sometimes jumping into profit gauges is just too big of a start. So that's why I kind of put that second, but it actually has a bigger impact on people's business and then ultimately on their life. And some of the other things we've done over the years, you know, oil samples, we have saved a lot of people a lot of money by bringing oil analysis to the listeners and making you aware of how important it is to do oil analysis and making the kits available. You know, my mission, I've said it many times, is to make the trucking industry a better place. And I'm going to do that by helping one owner-operator at a time. I want to help you do what you do better. And if we do that, and then you turn around and you share that with somebody, we will make this industry a much better place. And that's my mission. That's what I get up for every day. And I've often said the way we will help you is when we identify a need or a problem, I'll find the solution. And if I can't find it, we'll create it. And that's what we did with fuel gauges and profit gauges. We couldn't find a good solution to help people track their fuel economy. So we created one. We couldn't find a good accounting system out there, even though there were dozens. They just sucked, honestly. So we created one. So we will either find the solution, go create the relationship with the company and the partnership and bring those things to you, or if we have to, we'll create it. One of the areas that I've been touching on for the last 6 months, and it creates a lot of controversy, and that's okay. I'm okay with controversy. In fact, that usually tells me I'm on the right track, is health and fitness. And this makes a lot of people uncomfortable. But I can promise you this, when we bring it all together, which I don't have it all nailed down yet, but when I figure out the way to bring this all to you as the driver and the owner-operator in the right way, this will have the biggest impact of all. Bigger than tracking your fuel mileage, bigger than tracking your numbers in profit gauges, bigger than knowing oil analysis and rolling resistance and aerodynamics and taxes and accounting and all those other things we talk about. This will have a bigger impact than all of them. Tell you that I have experienced it myself in my own life, and I've been working with dozens of people who are experiencing this themselves. Everything starts with our health. I'm not sure how I missed that for 52 years of my life. And I didn't totally miss it. I've always been, you know, certainly not a fitness fanatic, but I've always tried to stay healthier. My first business was a gym. I coached wrestling for a lot of years. I've always tried to eat what I thought was healthier. But I didn't really make health my absolute number one priority. Now I look back and think, why not? How did I miss this? How can we not understand that without health, nothing else matters? If you are sick, your relationships will be sick. If you are sick, your business will be sick. If you are sick, everything about your life will suffer. And when I say sick, I don't mean that you have to get to the point where you have a debilitating disease, although the more I look around, the more I'm seeing people that do have debilitating diseases. Insulin resistance, type 2 diabetes, obesity, high blood pressure, sleep problems. I could go on and on and on. It's rampant in our society. It's getting worse every year. It's the numbers are just staggering if you start to read them. And then it's even much more pronounced in our industry. And I understand why. I've lived that life. I just spent 4 months on the road. I know what it's like to try to stay healthy. But I can also promise you this. I just spent four months on the road, and it was the healthiest 4 months of my life. I felt and still feel, I'm home now, but I'm continuing the habits. I started before I left on the road. I said the struggle was going to be to see if I can continue it on the road, and I did. Not only did I continue all the good health habits, I added to them. And I can't tell you enough how much better it has made me feel. You know, in all the books I've read over the years, one of the things that I think we all want is we just want to be happy. And how do you quantify that? How do you quantify happy? What does it take to make you happy? And we always tend to look for something external, money, fame, recognition, accomplishment, and those things are all good. No question about it. I'm happy when I'm accomplishing something. But I would also find that if I wasn't accomplishing something nonstop, then I wasn't as happy. And even when I was accomplishing, I still had times where I wasn't all that happy. Well, I found out what it takes to be happy for no apparent reason. You've got to get your health right. When you get your health right, and I'm sure it has something to do with brain and brain chemicals and all kinds of things. I don't know how to explain it, but I can tell you I've experienced it. When you get your health right, your mood and your happiness will improve tremendously for no apparent reason. So you are going to be hearing more about this. That's what we do here. I want to bring things to you that make your life and your business better. And if we do that one driver, one owner operator at a time, we'll make the industry a better place to be. Still working on putting that all together, but I will be doing it. Stick around. We'll be right back. We'll get to your phone calls. I'm Kevin Rutherford. Welcome back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. The website is letstruck.com. I'm going to get right to the phone calls. Let's head off to Ohio. Greg, welcome to the program.
Well, thanks, Kevin, for taking my call. I got a question about a brake chamber mounting plate problem that I'm having. The plate on the passenger side broke 3 times in the last 2 months. The last time I ordered it from Volvo, they told me, you better hope it doesn't break again, because that was the last one in the country, and Meritor is not making anymore. So today, I had the truck in the shop, and the driver's side brake chamber mounting plate is broke. And Volvo has told me, good luck. They will keep searching, but they doubt they'll find one. Any reason or any thought of what could be causing this problem? So I can get it to stop first and then get the part.
you know, had the passenger side broke and you replaced it, and then the driver side broke and you replaced it, and then everything was fine, we would just look at it as metal fatigue over time, and, you know, it's just one of those parts likely to break. But when you put a new one on, and then it breaks again, and did you say you did it three times on the passenger side?
The passenger side, the first time it was a boneyard part, the second time was a new part, and then the third one has lasted.
Okay.
And now I'm on the driver's side.
That does change my thought again. See, if you put a new part on there and it broke again, then I would think, okay, this isn't metal fatigue. This isn't age-related. We've got something else going on. We've got a brake that's maybe extending too far, too much pressure, something. I don't know what. I'd have to start working on that. But what you're telling me is the first time you put a new part on there, it's working fine so far.
Correct.
Okay. So then the big issue right now is the fact that you've got another one busted. Nobody has the part.
Yes, and nobody can tell me why they keep busting. So I figured I would call you because you're my go-to guy. Well, you're everybody's go-to guy, so, you know.
Well, how many miles are on this truck?
1.1.
Okay, and I'm going to go back to my original thought. Maybe they just busted because it's that time. You know, it's metal fatigue over time. And it's not to say they couldn't have made a better part that wouldn't have busted, because we have lots of trucks that go 2 million miles and don't bust those brackets. But maybe it's just a common thing. Now, you went to the junkyard and bought a used one. It broke. You got a new one, and it's not breaking for now. So it's hard to say. Were they just breaking because they were old and it was metal fatigue, or is there something else wrong? So two things I would recommend. One, is this a really complicated part, or could somebody fabricate one for you?
I'm thinking somebody might be able to fabricate. That might be my next step. I'm waiting on Volvo to call me back. I just have to tell you that I'm a huge fan of Volvo pre-emissions. I have a 2003 ISX. I love it.
Good.
The problem I run into with Volvo is if
parts.
Something breaks, you're down a lot longer than Freightliner. So I think this will be my last one, because right now I drive a glider kit from Fitzgerald, and if something does go wrong, I know somewhere someone has the part. So just a recommendation.
I couldn't agree with you more. Volvo over the years drove me insane. I can remember renting a truck because they didn't have a mirror cover in stock and couldn't get one for me in time. And, you know, I couldn't send a driver out with a mirror cover flapping in the breeze. So that kind of stuff with Volvo drove me nuts. Their service is worthless. I would not take my trucks to a Volvo dealer ever for work. But I couldn't even get parts. So I agree with you. I love the trucks. Hated their parts and service system. I was just, I guess I was willing to put up with it and slam. Because, you know, I bought another old Volvo, same thing. But I would pursue both avenues right now. Keep trying to get the part from Volvo, but I would also be looking around for a machine shop that could fabricate this for me. And then I would probably do a really good brake inspection on this thing. I would be measuring stroke and just checking, you know, looking at it logically to say what could be going wrong to cause this to crack here. And without having it right in front of me, it's hard for me to, you know, picture what might be happening. But it certainly wouldn't hurt to just do a really good brake inspection on this to see if there's something else causing it.
That's kind of why I was in the shop, because it's DOT Blitz. You know, I wanted to make sure everything was on the up and up. And that's when they came back, and I'm like, oh, you're kidding me, you know. But what you say makes perfect sense about fatigue. So it is getting up there. It's close to 1.2. So, but, you know, I'll find the part, and I'll get it on and get it inspected again. I appreciate all the information.
You're welcome. Thanks for the call. Speaking of brakes and brake stroke adjustment, we're going to be doing more education about this. Not long ago, I had Andy Mallion on with me, who's really knows a lot about it. But it's another one of those areas that until you understand it, it can be confusing. We have three different brake stroke distances, and then the manufacturer says the brake stroke can be one distance, but the DOT says another number. So you could actually be dealing with six different numbers trying to understand what you should be measuring on brake stroke. We think that's a little too complicated, but once you understand your truck and you know what brake chamber you have, what your brake stroke adjustment should be, then it gets a little more clear. But if you want to really be sure that your brakes are functioning properly all the time with just a simple walk-around visual inspection, you've got to check out our newest product. I'm very excited about this. It's called BrakeSafe. You can find it in our stores. It is simple. It's easy to install. A couple bolts. In fact, it's one bolt and you change the clevis pin and you get a new clevis pin in the kit. And then all you do is walk around and you'll see a visual indication on your pre-trip of whether or not your brakes are in adjustment, and it can identify other brake problems as well. Again, just a visual look is all you need. To put it on your tractor is less than $165. Can't beat it. So check it out. You'll find it in the store, letstruck.com/store. Let's get to some phone calls. We're off to New York. Orville, welcome to the program.
Hey, Kevin, how are you doing today?
Good. What can I help you with?
Kevin, I got a question. How do you feel about them old Schneider trucks, like 2009? 2008, 2007. I was thinking of purchasing one. I mean, the specs look okay. You know, it's a 10-speed with a, I think that's a 364 rear or something like that.
They had some with 264s, which would mean it's got a direct drive transmission. Now, Orville, I've got to ask you a question before I answer yours. Well, let me ask you two, just so I don't jump on you for no apparent reason. You're not talking about some of the gliders that Schneider built, are you?
No. The oldest. Okay. Those got the 14-liter Detroit?
Yeah, so if we're not talking about the gliders, then I have to ask you a question. How long have you been listening to my show?
Damn, that's about 8 months now.
Okay, so you've been around a little bit. Have you ever heard me tell anybody they should buy an 09 or an 010 anything?
No.
And I'm never going to. I don't care what color they were, who bought them, who spec'd them. If they have any engine after 03, I'm not interested. I will not own one. And because I wouldn't own one, I really can't recommend anybody else should. There are other ways, even if you have to be California compliant, which I think we should all just boycott California and put an end to this kind of insanity right now before any other state decides that they want to go down that road. Not that I'm too worried about that, but I just think we should just boycott California, put an end to this insanity, stop letting one state hold an entire industry hostage, and I think we should boycott the EPA standards. We should all go back to 03 pre-emission engines.
All right, gotcha. Well, my other option is a FLD, that's a Cummins, a red top Cummins, that's a 96.
That's a now FLD. We're talking. Now we're talking about a truck I can get excited about. So hold that thought. I'm going to come back to you. See, now you and I have something we can talk about. I was just going to hang up on you before, but now you've got me excited. Stick around. We'll be right back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. ¶¶ Welcome back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. The website is letstruck.com. If you need any help from us, if you have any questions about anything in the store or accounting or a tax service, CMC next year, whatever it might be, give us a call. It's 855-800-FUEL. 855-800-3835. I'm going to go back to New York. I was talking to Orville. Orville, tell me a little bit more about this truck.
That truck is a 96. It got a Cummins in there, N14 Select, and that's a 373 rears with a 10-speed.
Boy, this is a moneymaker. Really, this is a truck that it's not pretty. No question it's older, but if you want to make money and reduce your risk, this is the kind of truck you look for. Now, I don't know how I missed this over the years. I knew the N14 was I described it every time somebody asked me about an N14. I said, it's not your absolute best engine for fuel economy. I'd rather have a Detroit. It's not your best engine for power or torque. I'd rather have a Cat. But it's right smack in the middle of all of that, and it is just rock solid. That's how I described that engine over the years. Well, we've been talking about the N14 more, and I've been doing more research on it, talking with Bruce. I know of two of these engines right now that have over 1.9 million miles, and they haven't been touched. I didn't even think that was really possible, much less the fact that I would find two of them. That is, when I said it was rock solid, I'm not kidding. And I'm putting more and more work into figuring this engine out for fuel economy, and I think we will get very, very close to what we can get out of the Detroit.
Okay.
So, you know, like I say, it's not a pretty truck, but you'd be hard-pressed to find a good reason not to buy a truck like this if you want to go out and make money.
My only problem was with the dash. With them Freightliners, the dashboard is always teared up, you know? So I was trying to say...
Well, not on the FLD. You're thinking of the Century and the Columbia, and I went through that. I've rebuilt a couple of them, and they're expensive to rebuild, and they take a long time, and then after a couple of years, they'll all be busted up again. But that's the Coronado, the Century, and the Columbia. They all share the same dash. The FLD has a very different dash, and they stay together much better.
Okay.
Check that one out. I think that, like I say, very, very little risk in buying a truck like that. We can keep them on the road. We can keep them running. We can keep them making money. And there are very few things, almost nothing, that's ever going to go wrong with that truck that we don't know how to fix. That is not the case with the 09s and 010s. Let's head off to Mississippi. Paul, welcome to the program.
Paul here. Howdy.
Good afternoon. What's on your mind today?
Well, just a word of advice for the previous guy. Buy the old truck.
Yeah, and this is coming.
That's coming from someone that has a new truck. Yeah,
that's right.
I found a '97 Volvo with a 12.7 Detroit that was rebuilt at 1.5 million, and it now has just under 1.8. But it's been sitting for a long time.
Okay.
That's still something worth looking at, though, isn't it?
You know, it is. Absolutely. One of the things I'm finding is that I think it has something to do with, you know, newer materials and better oils and things like that. But we're finding that trucks that sat for a long time really don't pose the kind of problems we used to think that they did. I mean, certainly, tires are gone. I will not run a tire that's been sitting around at all. So those just gets all new tires. Yeah, belts and hoses, we can inspect them. It certainly doesn't hurt to replace them. But other than that and changing the fluids, I mean, we find these trucks sit around for years sometimes. You put them on the road, And you go through that initial period where you get kind of little annoying things that'll break here and there.
Yeah.
Yeah, but once you get through that, they can be really solid trucks, and we don't find any major problems with them.
So I just need to find someone to buy this newer truck so I can buy that older truck.
Yeah. Well, here's the first question you have to ask somebody. Ask them if they listen to my show, because if they do, you can
find
them. And, yeah, that's right.
Yeah. Put it on the open market.
Yeah.
There you go.
That's right. Yeah. Don't try selling it on this show. It'll never work.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it might. There's still some people that do the wrong thing.
Well, you're right. I guess I shouldn't say that, because I still get lots of questions, people wanting to buy a truck like that. But, I mean, you are a great example. Here's one of the things that has always kind of made me a little crazy, if I think too much about it, is people who give advice about this is better than that or that is better than this when they've only experienced one of the two. Like, I get people all the time who will tell me, oh, I don't know why you spend so much money on Apple products or Apple computers. They're overpriced. They're expensive. They're just not worth it. My PC's better. And I'll say, well, oh, so how many years did you use an Apple computer? Oh, well, I never have. Well, let me tell you something. I used a PC for 18 years before I switched to an Apple, so I have the experience with both, and now I choose to buy the Apple. That should probably tell you that I've had the experience with both, and I like this one better. So you having experience with one trying to convince me, it's not going to work. Or people who say, I can't believe you recommend those Super Singles. They're horrible. And I'll say, oh, so how many sets have you owned? Well, I've never owned any. I drove a truck once with them.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, well, I've listened to you since 07, and I still made the mistake, but I let the salesman and the Cummins guy, it's all good now because it's SCR and it's outside the engine and we've got all the problems solved, and it's like, and I fell for it, so, yeah.
Well, see, but now your opinion to me counts. You're a guy that I would listen to because you've experienced both.
Well, I haven't really had a lot of problems compared to some guys, but I get sick of the damn check engine light coming on. You spend $2,500 at the dealer and 53 miles later, ding, check engine light comes on again. Yeah.
Yeah, Dale renamed that. That is now called the throw money at
go
the
to the dealer light, yeah.
Yeah, that's right. Well, I think you're on the right track with this one. I would not worry about the mileage. I wouldn't worry about the fact that it's been sitting. All of that stuff we can overcome. And you know what? I'm not trying to convince anybody that old trucks don't break. They do. But when they break, we know how to fix them. And you don't get that light coming on 53 miles later and then have the dealer look at you and go, oh, well, I guess that didn't fix it. Let's try something else. My question is, why don't you refund me the money for the last thing you tried that didn't work? There you go. There it is from somebody with the experience of owning old trucks, then owning a new truck, and now, even though he says, I haven't had as much trouble as some people who call, but I'm still not willing to own one of these. I'm going to go back and get an older truck. Let's go to Georgia. Michael, welcome to the program.
Welcome, Kevin. Thanks for taking my call. Got a question. I had and currently experiencing some clutch slippage issues. I have an 07 Freightliner Columbia with a 10-speed Eaton transmission. And back in November, I had a heavy load and coming up a grade, and when my RPMs got up to about 1,400, RPMs went up, but my truck wasn't accelerating, so I knew that to be clutch slippage. So I was headed home for Thanksgiving. I said, well, clutch has been in for maybe about 400,000 miles. I'll go ahead and get it changed. So I did my research, keep all my records. It was about 390,000 miles. Got a new clutch put in, and, here recently, it's just May, I started experiencing the same slippage issues at about 1,400 RPM. And I had a light load, which I thought was kind of different. I thought it would slip more under heavy load, but it's always right at 1,400 RPM. And I can't figure it out. I don't think that my clutch would be slipping that quick, so I don't know if I needed to break it in or what. Do you have any ideas?
I've got some ideas. I'm trying to work through them in my head because, honestly, at 400,000 miles, I'd be shocked that a clutch needed replaced. I mean, most of mine make it a million. I mean, I have replaced so few clutches in the trucks that I've owned over the years that 400,000 would make me wonder why. The music's playing. Let me get to a break, and I'll come back. We can talk about this. Stick around. We'll be right back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. Welcome back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. I'm going to get right back to the phone calls. I was talking with Michael in Georgia. Michael, are you still with me?
Yes, I am.
Okay, now this clutch that had 400,000 miles on it, did you own that truck that whole time?
Yes.
You know, and I don't want to just pile this on you right now, but the one thing I've seen that will make a clutch wear out fast is a driver. A driver who's just hard on a clutch. You don't tend to ride with your foot sitting on the clutch, do you, on the pedal?
Never. Never. Float gears, so I hardly ever use the clutch except to take off.
Right. Yeah, so, you know, and as long as you're not, I mean, really, really dragging out the, you know, letting the clutch out super slow and slipping it as you're getting going, which I doubt that you're doing, you're kind of in the same spot I was. I mean, I used the clutch to get started, shift gears without it. My clutches would usually last a million miles. I mean, I very few clutches I can ever remember replacing. When they replaced it, did they replace everything, pressure plate, throw out bearing, clutch, the whole shot?
Yes, and that was a caveat I wanted to tell you about. The reason they changed it was not the clutch was bad. I had a rear main seal leak, and when they went in, they changed everything. So that was why I originally had it changed. And so I was also, you know, kind of wanted to ask if you think maybe there's a rear main seal leak and a little oil getting on the clutch.
That's what I'm wondering, and that's kind of where I was getting to, was what was wrong with the clutch when they took it out? I mean, what kind of condition was it in? I'm thinking there are two other possibilities here, and is this an Eaton clutch?
Yes.
Okay, so I'm thinking we're either getting oil on it or we're getting a bad adjustment on it. How does it feel when you were driving it? I mean, does it feel, does the pedal play feel right, and does the clutch feel strong up until now?
Yes, always felt right. Feels right after they changed it. You know, felt right before they changed the first one. It hasn't changed as far as the feel.
Yeah, I think the only thing we can do is get back in there and inspect it, because that there's just, I mean, it shouldn't have had a problem at 400,000 unless it just got saturated, and it certainly shouldn't have a problem now unless we're getting a lot of oil on it again.
Okay. All right, I appreciate it. Well, if I have time, one other question. I wanted you to take a look at an oil sample Lisa sent over to you. I'm just kind of curious as to how it looks to you with the miles that I have on the oil.
Well, you've got 234,000 miles on the oil, and this sample looks fantastic. I mean, if we look at the stuff that's been flagged, let's talk about, first, let's throw out the boron and the moly. Those mean absolutely nothing. Those are just additives, and the fact that the numbers are a little off means nothing at all, so we could ignore those. If we look at the base number, last time it was at 2.9 flag, now it's at 3.1. So it actually came up a little bit. That's good. We want the base higher. So nothing really wrong with the base to be worried about. Your lead gets flagged at 24, but if we go back, it was 24, 22, 24, 25. So really, in 100,000 miles, the lead hasn't changed at all. Your iron was 51, 46, 53, 53. So it really hasn't changed. I mean, this is a really good-looking oil sample. Your soot is less than 0.1. Your fuel dilution, which is at 1.4, which is nothing. I would not touch this engine. If anybody even comes near it saying it's time for an overhead, trip them and kick them or do something. Don't let them go near this thing because it's running great.
Okay, well, my other question on the oil sample, I've been following you for a long time, so I've been doing everything you tell me. And on the last oil change, I put on a Lubefiner filter, but I only changed one of the factory filters because you said sometimes if you put both of them, then your base might come up too high. So when it came up a little bit, I was wondering, would it be a good idea to go ahead and swap it out with two new ones to go ahead and get the base up?
Yeah, it looks like on yours, you could go ahead and put both of them on there.
Okay, sounds great.
All right, okay. Good stuff, though. I love that oil sample. It looks fantastic. Let's go to Iowa. Roger, welcome to the program.
Hey, Kevin. I got a 96 M14. I had a 1.5 million on it, and I did an in-frame, did it myself. Do they still do break-in periods with oil, or does the guy just run good oil, what you're going to run in it for its life?
Here's what we like to do. Put whatever oil is readily available when you first do the in-frame. So Rotella, whatever you've got handy, throw it in there. 5,000 miles, take it out, and then put in whatever oil you like. Now, I prefer synthetics. I like the new 30-weight oils. I think we're getting great fuel economy out of them, and they are holding up really well. So I would go with a 30-weight synthetic or synthetic blend, and then, you know, with a bypass filter, that's what I would just leave in there forever. But we usually get that first initial oil out within 5,000 miles because it's junked up pretty quick.
Yeah, well, I've only got 1,500 miles on it. I just did it over the weekend. I started on last Wednesday, got done with it Sunday. So, it's fresh.
That's always satisfying to do it yourself, huh?
Yeah, it's exciting.
It really is. It's nice to get in there and get greasy and know every part on your engine like that.
And there's no feeling like hitting the key and listening to it. You know, I mean,
right.
1.5 million, we aren't going to candy coat anything. It ran rough. You know, it was not a smooth, clean-running motor. It was sitting idle and smoke, and it was rough,
yeah.
It vibrated. I mean, now I walk up to it, and it's like you're walking up to a different truck. You know, every time I walk up to it, I get kind of a little grin inside, you know.
That's right.
I had something else to ask you, now I can't remember.
Yeah, it's because you're all excited about your new engine.
That's it. But I do want to switch to synthetic, but I got to replace my roller cam covers gasket because they seep a little bit, and I've tried tightening them, I've tried doing everything, I'm just going to end up resealing them. Then
okay.
I go to synthetic because, I mean, it don't leak, it seeps. You know, you can just see the oil right down the block. And, like, if I sit idle for 15, 20 minutes, I probably get 10 drops of oil on the ground, and that's irritating. You know, it's not an issue, it's more irritating. But how long before I'll... I mean, I've seen fuel mileage climb since I did this already. Granted, I only ran 600 miles and I checked my mileage. I was loaded right at 80,000, running in the wind, and I averaged 6.
Okay.
Well, we will typically see... You know, a new truck, if everything is brand new and tight, you can see fuel mileage gains all the way up to 100,000 miles. For some reason, on the Cascadias with the DD15s, we would actually see fuel mileage increase sometimes even up to 150,000 miles. Now, we couldn't always document that, but it looked like it was a pattern to me. When we do an in-frame, though, we have to remember the rest of the truck's already broke in. It's loose. It's, you know, everything's moving as free as it's ever going to move. You might see the fuel mileage climb up to about 25, maybe 50,000 miles on the outside. And then after that, it's probably going to settle in unless you do something to keep improving it.
Okay. Because my goal is 7. And I'm hoping this in-frame gets me 6.5. With the old motor, I was 6.8, 6.7, 6.8, you know, right in there. And I'm hoping that I can hit 7 with this one now, after the in-frame.
No, I don't think I don't think it'll be any problem at all. In fact, I think you'll hit 7 with just the in-frame. And, you know, if you wanted to get to 7.5, certainly not out of the question. You know, this could be an 8-mile-per-gallon truck. Like I say, the N14, and I don't want to give people the wrong impression. I'm not saying it's an engine that's bad for fuel economy. It's not. It just wasn't as good as the Detroit, but I also realize I never put as much time into the N14. I've never owned an N14. I had a couple big cam Cummins back way back when. But I'm doing more research. I'm working with Bruce. We're going to figure out how to really tweak the N14 and what really works for fuel economy on it. The music's playing. That means I've got to get out of here. Thanks for joining me. I'll see you back here next time. Be safe. Be profitable. Do the hard work and master the journey. Good night, everyone. I'm Kevin Rutherford.
Thanks for tuning in to The Audio Road. If you have any questions, give us a call at 855-800-FUEL. That's 855-800-3835. Check out the website at letstruck.com and find us on facebook.com/letstruck.